Amid the cheers and laughter, a voice called,
"Thought wagering weren't allowed on ship."
It was Tully. He'd been of service when they'd boarded the merchant ship, and he wasn't wrong now. But as some of the men grumbled, Hawk wished Tully would shut his big mouth before Hawk was forced to shut it for him. Snell answered,
"This is true, but seeing as we're killing time waiting for our prize, perhaps we can make an exception this once."
He glanced at Hawk.
"Provided the men can make their own side wages."
"Of course, just this once."
Snell always knew how to keep the peace amongst the men, which made him an excellent quartermaster. The brat would fail in no time, so the wages wouldn't spin out of control.
"All right," Hawk called. "Let's start with a simple half-hitch. Mr. Lee, will you demonstrate? Then the boy gets one chance."
While the men murmured amongst themselves, placing bets, Plum looked up over his shoulder. "And how many knots do I have to master before I win?" Hawk gave him a wolfish grin.
"As many as I say."
He knocked Plum in the back with a sharp tap of his knee.
"All right, then. Prove us wrong. Bend the line."
And then he did. Each knot and hitch Lee demonstrated, Plum mastered in one go. Figure eight, reef, even sheepshank. Hawk came around and watched the concentration on Plum's face, pink tongue sometimes darting out between his lips. Gaze focused in on Lee's hands, ignoring the growing murmur of the crew, who called out suggestions to Lee to stump the prisoner. Somehow none did. The coarse rope reddened Plum's fingers and palms, but he didn't hesitate as he mimicked Lee's movements, watching keenly, sweat gathering on his brow even in the day's chill. Despite himself, admiration began to grow in Hawk. Plum was unbowed, unintimidated. Some of the crew started cheering for him, and wagers flew fast and furious. Finally, his attempt at a backsplice unraveled, and Hawk called an end to it.
"Do we think he's earned his prize?"
The eyes were almost unanimous. Then Plum grinned up at him, and for an insane moment Hawk wanted to smile back. For fuck's sake, clearly his brain was addled from too many days of peaceful routine aboard ship instead of stalking the seas for prey. Fortunately, he schooled himself in time and hauled Plum to his feet, hurrying him back down to the cabin. One of the men brought the bucket of seawater, and Hawk sliced off a sliver of soap. Back behind his desk, he couldn't force his gaze away as Plum stripped off his shirt, revealing surprisingly firm, lean muscles. Plum realized he was being watched, and his hands stuttered on the waist of his breeches. Hawk almost turned his head, feeling strangely guilty, before reminding himself he was a goddamn pirate and this was his prisoner, to whom he owed no courtesy or shred of privacy. He turned his chair to face Plum's corner and leaned back. Still in his breeches, Plum blinked at him. He glanced down at himself, then back at Hawk. Clearly he was unnerved. But there was something else. A hum vibrating through the room. A low tug between them. Hawk recognized something in this boy that flared his nostrils and stirred his blood. Legs spread in his chair, boots planted on the floor, Hawk took him in.
"Where did the spoiled son of Walter Bainbridge learn to bend a ship's line?"
"I never have until today. I'm just good at using my hands."
Better than good, and quicker than many men Hawk had sailed with. Perhaps there was more to the younger Bainbridge than met the eye. Not that it matters, since he is nothing more than a means to an end. Yet Hawk found himself asking,
"Is that so? More muscles than I expected. You're small but strong. Would have thought you much softer."
I always..." He raised an eyebrow.
"Do go on."
"I always loved the outdoors. climbing trees, running, swimming. And there's wrestling. My tutor taught me.
He flushed scarlet all the way down to his chest, shifting guiltily.
Did he now?
Hawk smiled slowly, wickedly. He lowered his voice to a conspiratorial pitch.
Did your tutor also bugger you senseless?
The thought that another man might have unlocked that treasure was strangely disappointing. Plum's eyes popped wide and a gasp escaped his bow lips.
No, he was a good man, not like...
He swallowed hard, apparently thinking better of what he was going to say.
No, I would never... My tutor wasn't like that. He was kind and proper.
Ah, kind and proper men are scarce. How fortunate for you. A shame your luck has run out.
Plum licked his lips, his gaze dropping from Hawk's face down to the bulge between his spread legs. And he shuddered, unmistakable hunger in his eyes.
Ah, yes, there it is.
Hawk's instincts were correct. He knew it in his bones. The question was why he should care in the slightest. What did it matter that they shared common desires? Plenty of men did. Over the years since that initial bloom of excitement and tenderness, Hawk hadn't given it much thought beyond finding the odd anonymous man for release. It had been so different with him.
John.
Irrepressible smile, blonde hair falling over his blue eyes, rebellious and beautiful. They'd been so innocent, so fucking naive, believing they could have anything good and pure in the belly of that frigate. That they could have happiness despite their low circumstances, their virtual imprisonment. Perhaps it was Plum's clear innocence that tugged at him. Sodomy was strictly forbidden in the Royal Navy, and Hawk's fumblings with John had happened only in shadow. But as a privateer and now a pirate, it was hardly unusual. Men fucked as they pleased, jaded and far from the giddiness of youthful discovery. He hadn't thought on John for years, and it was weak and foolish to do so now. But even as he banished John's spectre, he couldn't take his eyes off his captive. As Plum's nipples went hard, his cock now unmistakably swelling in his breeches, Hawk fought his own excitement, his bollocks tightening. He wanted to sully that innocence, steal it, bask in it. He fought the urge to draw Plum between his thighs so he could suck Plum's nipples, one and then the other, so he could hear his gasps of pleasure. Instead, he asked, "Have you truly never fornicated with a man?"
"Of course I haven't."
Plum whirled away, dropping to his knees and splashing water over himself from the bucket, his voice ragged.
"That would be unnatural, a sin."
He shook his head violently.
"It's disgusting, shameful. No decent man would entertain such a notion. You're a fiend."
"Ah, yes.
And there that is." It was foolish to be disappointed, but it settled heavily into Hawk's limbs. Ridiculousness, especially since he might be killing Plum in a few weeks. He shifted his chair back to face his desk, distinctly uncomfortable, stomach unsettled. He pulled his log near, running his fingers along the sturdy spine and over the worn leather cover. It had always given him a measure of comfort to record the ship's activities in his logbook, report the weather, and make notes on anything of interest, as if the writing of it somehow gave weight to his meaningless life. He dipped his quill and inked a fresh page with,
"Prisoner is a typical gentleman, hypocrite who denies himself pleasure for England's false sense of morality."
Then he barked, "You have a minute to wash, starting now. Do not waste it with sermonizing." From the corner of his eye, he caught the pale swathes of flesh as Plum stripped off his breeches, splashed water over his skin, and lathered the soap. Hawk shouldn't have wanted to turn his head and look properly, just as he shouldn't have been surprised Walter Bainbridge's son insisted on nonsense about shame and sin. Why had he thought even for a moment that there might be more to him?
That there was any common ground between them?
Of course, Plum was just as false as his father.
Time's up. Bucket by the door.
Hawk fixed his gaze on the logbook and dipped his quill. He'd had to hide his inclination to favour his left hand for years after his father had caned him for it. He supposed it was one of the benefits of being a pirate. Everyone already thought you possessed by the devil. Although he bent his head to the log, he found his eyes following Plum's progress. Water dripped down naked flesh, his tight, round buttocks flexing as he bent. When Plum turned, Hawk jerked his gaze back down at the page to find dots of ink all over it. Swearing, he ripped it out and started anew. Chapter 7 Shouts! Indistinct and urgent, they echoed overhead, rousing Nathaniel from an unpleasant, fitful sleep in his corner atop the awful blanket. The sun was high in the sky. The stern windows acted as a magnifying glass so that sweat slicked Nathaniel's skin and dampened his hair into a mess of curls. There were no drapes, and all he could do was huddle in his corner as the temperature rose. They must be well and truly sailing in the West Indies now, for this day was hotter than any other on the journey. Bolting up as thuds echoed, he rubbed his eyes and listened. Breath lodged in his throat. Yes, more shouts, growing in urgency now, and the ship seemed to be changing course. He hurried to the stern windows, peering through the squares of glass framed in wood, seeing nothing but the unbroken horizon. He waited there as minutes ticked by, footsteps pounding above and orders being shouted. None clear enough for him to make out in his prison cell. Despite the flurry of activity, time passed without anything else actually happening. Then there was a strange calm that stretched out, where the thud of Nathaniel's heart was too loud in his ears. More time passed. Perhaps it had been nothing at all. A change of course. And now back to the regular routine. Water slapping the hull, the ship creaking. Yet there was something in the air, a palpable sense of expectation. He waited. Perhaps they'd spotted another merchant ship in the distance to plunder. Or perhaps... There! In the corner of his field of vision through the windows, it was indeed another ship. Three masts, bigger than their sloop. Nathaniel's heart raced. Was it a Royal Navy ship, or a Spanish man-of-war? He squinted, forehead to the hot window, wondering if Hawk had another spyglass tucked away in his desk. Whatever it was, it seemed to be following, full sails arching in the wind. He knelt on the narrow window seat and lifted his hands around his eyes to cut the glare, trying to make out the vessel's origin, praying to see the Union Jack fluttering in the sky. It was no use, the ship still too far away. More time passed, the ship steadily gaining on them. Nathaniel's damp skin squeaked on the glass. The mystery vessel came about another few degrees, and there was its flag snapping in the wind. His stomach dropped. Black. It was solid, no white or red embellishments, simply a blunt declaration of intent. But why would pirates attack each other? He supposed for the same reason they attacked any ship, and it was foolish to expect any kind of loyalty amongst thieves. Pirates surely made rivals of one another. The ship disappeared from view, and Nathaniel waited. The damned Manta didn't seem to be attempting to outrun it now. Perhaps the captains knew each other and were friends. And now that they were close enough to make a certain identification. Nathaniel flew off the window seat as the blast rocked the ship, air slamming from his lungs as he crashed flat on his back. Then another blast, and another. Another, another! Wood splintered, the boom of each cannon rattling his teeth, his ears ringing, heart about to burst from his chest. He scrambled into the enclosure under the massive desk, tucking the chair back in after him as if that would help, curling into a ball. grateful the wood on three sides reached the floor, giving him an effective hiding place. The humid, cloying air in his enclosure was even harder to breathe, and terror seized his lungs. If these other pirates won, what would become of him? Would they want him as a ransom? Or simply slit his throat or toss him over the side? Or worse? He gripped his knees tighter, making himself small, hoping to be as forgotten as the cobwebs that strung across the underside of the desk. What if they kept him, passed him around, or tortured him? Or God knew what pirates were capable of. As much as he hated being Hawk's prisoner, and as much as he hated the idea of living on Primrose Isle with a stranger for a wife, doing his father's bidding, either prospect seemed preferable to this horrifying unknown that had exploded upon him. He huddled tighter into a ball, whispering a prayer, the continued blasts wreaking havoc on his nerves. Screams tore the air, ragged and despairing. The song of dying men. The ship shuddered and groaned, its own cannons returning fire. On and on it went, jolting and rolling, the air made of thunder. He plucked his ears and only knew he was screaming by the hoarseness of his throat. At any moment, Nathaniel was certain, the damned mantle would disintegrate in the roar of gunfire, sending him plummeting to the bottom of the sea, the desk his coffin. Abruptly, the guns went silent. More shouting up top, and the other ship's cannons fired again but seemed to miss their target with mighty splashes. Were they moving? He wasn't certain. Then there were no more cannon blasts at all. Had they surrendered? Were they to be boarded? He strained, listening, but he couldn't make sense of it. Sweat drenched him now, and he swiped it from his eyes, his shirt and breeches clinging to his skin as he waited, barely breathing, afraid he might piss himself. Nathaniel wasn't sure how long he remained huddled under the oven of the desk before the key turned in the lock of the cabin door. He pressed his lips together, frozen. "Oh, Lord, please, please save me. I promise I'll be a better man." The door opened. Whoever it was didn't say a word. Nathaniel would be invisible to them beneath the solid desk. Yet there was a little chunk of wood missing at the bottom, a gouge that had perhaps been ripped away in some unknown battle, or was simply due to a clumsy job moving the desk. Heart booming in his ears, Nathaniel inched down to peek through. He'd never thought it possible to be so very relieved to spot those gold-tipped boots. But he exhaled in a rush as Hawk thundered, "Where the fuck are you?" Nathaniel hadn't intended to anger him, and now he stayed motionless, terrified any movement or response would be his last. The door slammed shut, and Hawk's boots thudded on the planks. Yet it didn't sound like his usual confident stride. And then there was a burst of noise, a venomous curse and a mighty bang. It startled Nathaniel from his hidey-hole, and he shoved the chair aside, crawling out and coming almost face-to-face with Hawk, who had tripped onto his hands and knees. Blood splattered across his face, and he grimaced, teeth bared. He wore his coat, which must have been terribly warm, although it was unbuttoned. Nathaniel could only open and close his mouth like a helpless fish on a hook, waiting for Hawk to explode to his feet, and perhaps run Nathaniel through with his blade, which still hung from his belt. Then realization dawned. He couldn't. Was he? Yes. He was injured. The mighty pirate king had been brought low, not because he was about to haul Nathaniel out from under the desk, but because he'd fallen. And he didn't appear able to get back up. Are you? Nathaniel crawled closer, dangerously within reach. Hawk only seethed in response, a savage guttural groan. Nathaniel looked to the closed door. "Should I call for help?"
"No."
The notion seemed to infuriate Hawk so much that rage fueled him back to his feet, where he leaned heavily against the desk. Nathaniel couldn't spot exactly where Hawk was hurt until he came around to stand before him. The coat fell open, and Nathaniel could see the hunk of wood lodged in his right thigh. Sucking in a breath, he inched closer.
"You need the surgeon."
Tendons in his neck bulging, Hawk shook his head.
"The man need him more."
"Are we safe now?"
"Took out her mainmast. She'll be licking her wounds for a while. Serves them right for trying to take us on. Fucking one-eyed Alfred and the javelin. He attacks anyone and everyone without provocation, no matter the risk. Madman."
"It looked like quite a big ship."
Grimacing, Hawk said,
"Aye, but bigger isn't always better. Those hulking ships are not as..."
He waved his hand in the air as if searching for a word.
"Agile?"
"Yes, you fancy little fuck. Not as agile."
He pushed off the desk.
"Stay out of my way while..."
He stumbled, and would have crashed to the floor if Nathaniel hadn't darted forward to catch him, almost toppling with the weight as he jammed his left shoulder under Hawk's right. Hawk insisted,
"I don't need help."
"Oh, for goodness sake, you clearly do." Nathaniel took a step, bearing as much of Hawk's weight as he could, their sides pressed together as they crossed to the bed. Hawk's harsh breathing was loud in Nathaniel's ears, and gunpowder, blood, and sweat filled his nose. At least the cabin was compact, and it was only several feet before he levered Hawk around and deposited him on the side of the mattress.
"I'm fine," Hawk winced,
shuddering as he tried to shake off his coat.
"Go back to your corner."
Perhaps he should have left the man to his own devices, since he didn't deserve any assistance, and certainly not sympathy. Yet here he was, the mighty Pirate King, grimacing and bleeding, crippled by injury like any number of sailors before him. He wasn't some fearless, untouchable god, rising unscathed above danger. No, he was merely a man. It should have satisfied Nathaniel to see him humbled, should have made him triumphant. But it unsettled him in a way he couldn't understand. Previously held truth splintered by cannon fire as surely as the damned Manta's hull. If the Seahawk was vulnerable, what hope did Nathaniel have to survive in the brutality of the new world? Here Hawk was, bleeding, hurting, and Nathaniel wanted to make it stop. He climbed onto the bed behind him and peeled the coat off, easing Hawk's arms free of the sleeves, the leather hot to the touch. Then he knelt at Hawk's feet and took hold of one of those ostentatious boots. He looked up with eyebrow raised. Hawk watched him, his usual bland or mocking expression replaced by one of genuine bafflement, forehead creased and nose slightly wrinkling. But he lifted his foot, and Nathaniel gently tugged the boot free. Then the other, which he did slowly since that was the injured leg. He leaned in close. The wood was 2 inches thick, jagged and splitting. It was lodged in Hawk's thigh, his tight black trousers torn where it impaled the muscle, a few inches sticking into the flesh. Hopefully it got some fat, too. Nathaniel shook his head.
"You need the surgeon."
"I told you, my men need him more. Just pull it out."
"Do you have bandages, at least? Anything to clean the wound?"
Hawk nodded to the desk, and Nathaniel rifled around, finding a bottle of rum, clean bandages, and a tin of medical instruments. When he turned back, Hawk was removing his weapons, keeping them close at hand behind him on the mattress. He narrowed his gaze.
"If you even consider some scheme to arm yourself, I assure you it will be ill-fated."
Nathaniel shook his head.
"How often must I remind you that I won't endanger my sister? I am at your mercy."
He should let the wound fester and perhaps eventually kill Hawk, but couldn't bring himself not to lend assistance, imagining how dreadful the pain was. Hawk tried to remove his trousers, fingers clumsy on the fastening, belt unbuckled. It seemed the tables had turned, and that Hawk was at Nathaniel's mercy, at least for the moment. pulse skittering with a fresh pulse of odd excitement. Nathaniel knelt and batted the pirate's hands away, finishing the job. Up.
Hawk obeyed,
raising his hips so Nathaniel could ease down his trousers and drawers, taking special care over the chunk of wood, tearing the material to make it easier. Hawk clutched the side of the bed, fingers white. Now the pirate was naked from the waist down, and Nathaniel was faced with a thick, meaty cock and bollocks, nestled in a thatch of dark hair. Throat dry, he ripped his gaze away, focusing on the bloody wound instead. He handed Hawk the rum. Drink. Again Hawk obeyed, and Nathaniel's skin prickled, his breath catching. This man might kill him. Yet Nathaniel thrilled at being close to him, at helping him. Perhaps winning some measure of approval. It was lunacy. He held Hawk's leg fast, hand over his knee. There was really nothing to do but get the wood out as gently as he could. He grasped the protuberance. "Relax your leg as best you can," he ordered. Hawk did as he was told. Fortunately, the wood came free without much effort. Quite unfortunately, it left several slivers of varying sizes embedded in Hawk's flesh. Nathaniel glanced up to find blood smeared on Hawk's lower lip, and realized he'd bitten through the skin.
"You can shout. I doubt the men will hear, given the racket up there."
Footsteps clomped, and voices called out. A general commotion in the wake of battle.
"No need," Hawk gritted out.
Nathaniel rolled his eyes.
"Yes, clearly all is well."
He fished out a pair of tweezers from the tin. The thought occurred again that he should leave the shards behind, practically ensuring an infection. But if Hawk died, Nathaniel didn't know what the rest of the crew would do with him. Or to him.
"Better the devil I know."
With his left palm flat on Hawk's upper thigh, only inches from his groin, Nathaniel leaned over and went to work. Blood oozed from the wound, and he had to stop to soak it up. Hawk's gaze weighed on him as Nathaniel teased out a thin piece of wood, and the parallels to the fable of the lion with a thorn in its paw weren't lost on him. When Hawk spoke, it was to hoarsely bark,
"Why the fuck is it so hot in here?"
"Because you somehow never thought to install drapes to keep out the sun?"
Hawk gave him a withering look.
"The window's open to let in the breeze."
"Oh."
Nathaniel blinked over at them, still not seeing how to shove them up.
"The ones on either side can be hooked open," Hawk muttered. "Just push them and make sure they latch."
Nathaniel crossed the cabin and did as instructed, sighing and breathing the fresh, cool air deeply.
"That's so much better."
"Indeed. Are you almost done?"
Nathaniel got out a tinderbox and lit a lantern, then handed it to Hawk.
"Hold it close."
He poked around in the wound as gently as he could. Hawk's labored breathing grew harsh and the other sounds of the ship distant.
"Are those from the lines?"
Hawk asked. At Nathaniel's frown, he added,
"Your hands. Not as smooth as I would have expected, given your station."
"I climb trees."
Hawk stared down at him, and Nathaniel shifted uneasily, that gaze prickling his skin much like slivers of wood.
"I enjoy using my body."
Hawk's lips twitched, gaze assessing.
"Teasing. Do you?"
Without warning, Nathaniel splashed rum into the wound, enjoying Hawk's indignant yelp. Then he quickly bandaged it, keeping his eyes off the pirate's devilish face and nether regions.
"There, I think you'll live, but the surgeon would have a better idea."
Hawk thrust the lantern at him, any hints of teasing gone.
"This is sufficient."
He pushed to his feet and promptly almost fell flat on his face, the bandage red and soaked. Nathaniel put the lantern on the floor and pushed Hawk back onto the bed, pulling up his feet and swinging his legs around.
"For the love of God, just rest here a few minutes at least." Perching on the side of the mattress, he pressed another bandage over the seeping wound. The sheets and floor were splattered red, and Nathaniel's shirt and breeches were splashed with blood as well. Keeping his eyes away from Hawk's nudity, Nathaniel asked, "Were many men hurt?"
"Some."
"Killed?"
"Two, last I knew."
"Oh." Nathaniel remembered how quickly the other ship had come upon them, everything going from normal to high alert in a heartbeat. And just as quickly, a life could be snuffed out. "Did they have families?"
"Us."
"What would have happened if the other ship had gotten close enough to board?"
"We'd have a lot more dead men on our hands. On both sides."
He wondered how many men Hawk had killed over the years, but didn't think it prudent to ask. At least Hawk finally surrendered, relaxing back against his pillow, gaze on the ceiling as Nathaniel kept pressure on the wound.
Hawk actually shut his eyes after a time, and Nathaniel's pulse fluttered at the intimacy of it.
The pirate king made mortal, his stubborn blood seeping out between Nathaniel's fingers, though slower now. Despite his best efforts, Nathaniel's gaze zeroed in on Hawk's soft, reddish prick, curving flat against his belly. His substantial balls were hairy and thick. It was impossible to ignore, and he had the brief luxury to look. Filled with blood, Hawk's cock would be impressive. Nathaniel wondered what it would feel like in his hand, if it would be hot to the touch. Would it be bitter or salty like sweat on his tongue? Would his spendings taste different from Nathaniel's when he'd shamefully licked his own seed from his hand in the past? He swallowed thickly. What would that cock feel like shoved inside him? He wouldn't run from it the way the mare had tried to escape the stallion. No. Before he died, Nathaniel wanted to experience a man's prick inside him, even just once. He was going to hell for his sinful desires regardless, so the journey might as well be worth it.
What if I die on this ship? A bolt of panic caught his breath, and he had to steady his hand on Hawk's wound, fighting the urge to scramble away. He stared down at the pirate. What if he kills me?
Would this man truly gut him if Walter didn't pay?
Perhaps if Nathaniel continued to help him, if he could ingratiate himself,
Hawk would be unable to slay him or follow through on his threats against Susanna.
Perhaps Nathaniel could save himself.
His gaze was drawn back to Hawk's prick, a low beat of want resounding.
Perhaps he could save himself and fulfill his cravings.
He'd always imagined he had plenty of time to explore his fantasies, to meet a man he could trust with his secret. But even if he survived the trip to Primrose Isle and the ransom exchange, how soon would he have to marry Elizabeth Davenport? Growing up, he'd known he'd have to wed eventually, but perhaps not until he was 30, plenty of time. Yet now the sands tumbled through the glass relentlessly. He'd told himself he'd only need it once, to be fucked the way he'd envisioned, to satisfy his curiosity and desire. And the itch, once scratched, would be manageable, and he could marry as required and be a faithful husband. But the risks of finding a man to trust on the unknown Primrose Isle were great. He should have done it before he'd left England. But short of polling the servants on who would be willing, he hadn't had the opportunity. He'd have greatly loved for Mr. Chisholm to share his desires. But the man was good and kind and devoted to his wife and young daughter. Nathaniel had known he'd be rejected. He hadn't been able to bear the sight of disappointment, and worse, disgust, in his tutor's eyes. His own breathing was harsh in his ears. It was beyond sinful and improper to be stirred by Hawk's genitals, the man's blood all over, an open wound under Nathaniel's hand. Had it only been, what, not even an hour since Nathaniel had cowered under the desk, certain he'd be swallowed by the sea at any moment? The fear had left a strange desire thrumming through him. Not mere desire for the male form, that he'd felt for ages, but a yearning to reach out and take hold of life while he still could. He could feel Hawk's pulse through the wound, the steady drum of his defiant heart, and he wanted to touch it, taste it, revel in being alive. At that very moment, another volley of cannonballs might be hurtling through the air, about to obliterate them. Nothing was assured. Each breath its own little miracle. He eyed Hawk, wondering what the reaction would be if he leaned over and took the parrot's cock between his lips. Surely most men wouldn't protest a wet, warm mouth around them, no matter whose it was. One of the boys from a neighbouring estate had been sucked by an admiral's daughter once, and he'd described it in such ribald detail, Nathaniel had stiffened in his breeches and not known of whom he should be more jealous, his friend for being serviced, or the girl for being able to take a hot prick into her mouth.
"See anything you like?"
Nathaniel jerked his head up, ripping his gaze from Hawk's groin to find the pirate watching him. His mouth had gone dry, and he hoarsely replied,
"What? No."
He busied himself changing the bandage again. "This needs to be stitched. There's no way around it."
Time will tell.
He huffed. Why was the swine so stubborn? "I bet you it does." Hawk met his gaze then, blue eyes fathomless, but his lips twitching.
"What will the prize be this time?"
Was it possible? Not only was the Pirate King immortal, bleeding and as vulnerable to injury as the rest of them, but he was entertaining a joke. Heart picking up, Nathaniel pondered his answer. "The next time you go ashore, I accompany you. I get to run down the beach as fast as I can." Hawk laughed sardonically.
"Yes, I'm sure you'd love to run away."
"Not running to escape, simply for exercise. For the sake of it."
"That's it?"
His forehead creased.
"You want to... run?"
"It's been far too long since I had the opportunity." Hawk shrugged carelessly.
"It's a bet."
There was no way Hawk could think he'd win, given the amount of blood already soaking the fresh bandage. Nathaniel simply nodded and accepted the unsaid thanks, his own blood rushing far too fast in the hush of the cabin. Chapter 8 Sitting on the side of the bed, Hawk hid a grimace as grizzled Mr. Pickering poked at his thigh. Graying hair flopping over his forehead, the surgeon nodded.
"Stitches are healing up nicely already."
He glanced at the corner of the cabin.
"Thanks in no small part to young Mr. Bainbridge's ministrations."
Hawk grunted, and Pickering went about applying a fresh bandage. It was true Plum had been helpful, and Hawk was still puzzled as to why. Surely Plum had an ulterior motive. Hawk needed to remain vigilant and not be moved by any acts of kindness, for kindness always carried a price. The prisoner only wished to worm into Hawk's good graces to save his own skin. Hawk had already made the silly bet, but that had to be the end of it. Of course, Plum had been right, and as soon as Snell had taken one look at the bloody mess in Hawk's cabin, he'd shouted for the surgeon and the needle and thread had come out. But Hawk had to remember the boy was his prisoner. He was nothing more than a representative of money and revenge, of the sea's justice. There was naught to be grateful for. Still, it was impressive that he hadn't been at all squeamish about the blood. For having lived a life of luxury, he truly was surprisingly practical and adept at physical tasks. The weight of his hand against the wound had been reassuring, as was the touch of his knuckles to Hawk's forehead a few times in the night, following Pickering's orders to check for fever. The last time, just before dawn, Hawk had pretended to remain asleep. The windows were still open, the cool breeze lovely on his skin, his sheet kicked aside. He'd heard the whisper of Plum's feet on the planks, the press of his fingers against his forehead, assessing for a few moments before lifting. He'd waited for the footsteps to retreat, but Plum had remained standing by the bed. He'd witnessed the hunger when Plum had eyed his prick after he'd tended to the wound, and if not for the burning ache in his thigh, Hawk might have gotten hard under that eager gaze. In the early morning, that gaze had returned, hot on his skin, and Hawk had allowed him to look. His balls had tingled, and he'd had to shift and stretch to send footsteps scurrying back to the corner. Pickering finished the bandage and groaned as he straightened, arching his back. Hawk frowned.
"You weren't injured yesterday, were you?"
The surgeon's hair grayed more with each week, it seemed. He'd been forced into service on a pirate ship years back thanks to a bad wager, and had discovered he liked it. Pickering laughed.
"No, it's simply old age. More aches and pains by the day, it seems."
Hawk knew the feeling, but kept that to himself as he pulled up a clean but rumpled pair of trousers, aware of Plum's gaze on him. Hawk had determinedly dressed, boots and all, ready for battle, even if he was being treated as an invalid. He eyed his feet. The leather could do with a polish, and the gold tips had dulled. He should shine them now while he lazed around useless. He stood, the bedframe creaking. Pickering was already upon him.
"No, no, no, you will stay abed the rest of this day. You insisted on leading the funerals last night, walking up there as if you were unscathed when you were in agony. You can fool the men, but I know better. You lost more than your fair share of blood, and infection could kill you. So you will remain here and rest until at least tomorrow, and preferably the following days as well. The sun is shining and the wind is blowing, and we're nearing Nassau with nary a sail on the horizon. If that changes, you'll be informed. In the meantime, get some rest for fuck's sake, or I'll hold you down and dose you."
Standing had sent a fresh, burning throb through his thigh, and although out loud he grumbled, Hawk secretly was grateful to sit again. As captain, he should want to be surveying his kingdom, ensuring smooth operations. But truthfully, his muscles were sore. A low headache that had seemingly been present for years pulsated. And of course the gash on his leg was impossible to ignore. The thought of being up top with all the men and their incessant noise was off-putting in the extreme. He still made a show of his displeasure, and Pickering resolutely ignored him before taking his leave. He'd barely gone when there was a knock, and a young voice called out,
"Rations!"
"Wait,"
Hawk answered, shoving himself off the bed with a wince. Plum piped up from the corner, but the surgeon just said,
"Shut up!"
Hobbling slightly, Hawk stood behind his desk. Sitting would probably be worse, so he opened his log and leaned heavily over it, hands on the scarred wood. He called,
"Enter!"
Their newest crew member, the red-headed Tully from the merchant ship, came in with fresh water and a bowl of salted meat and peas. He glanced around as if looking for something. All the blood had, of course, been cleaned. His eyes narrowed at Plum, who wore one of Hawk's old shirts, too big on him by half, the sleeves rolled up and the collar loose almost to mid-chest, a scattering of light hair peeking out of the white linen. Plum's shirt had been ruined by blood, but his breeches only had a few stains that were invisible under the tails of the shirt. Tully nodded toward Plum.
"Got his food. Not sure why he's wasting it."
Hawk gazed unseeingly at the log, fingers tightening on the desk.
"I don't recall asking for your opinion."
"Well, here you go, Bainbridge, you bloody lighter sack."
Tully carelessly dropped the cup and bowl on the floor near Plum with a clatter.
"Wonder how your bitch of a sister is. I was always real nice to her, and she never gave me the time of day. Stuck-up cunt. I hope your father don't pay and we get a chance to really stick it up her."
Plum was instantly on his feet, fists clenched. "Don't you dare even speak about my sister. No one's going to lay a finger on her while I still have breath."
"I'm sure it can be arranged that you don't know more."
Hawk banged the log shut and stood straight, ignoring the fiery throb in his leg.
Mr. Tully?"
He eyed him. Mangy red hair, freckles, yellowed teeth with at least one missing, skinny and hard, a feral little man with a beady gaze.
"I'm not sure what you hope to gain with this display, but if it's to impress me, you've missed the mark. Leave, and tell Mr. Snell you are no longer permitted in my cabin."
After opening his mouth as if to argue, Tully apparently thought better of it and scuttled out. Plum took a few steps, as if he wanted to give chase. "I can protect myself against him." Hawk snorted.
"Good. That wasn't about you. Mr. Tully needs to learn to obey my orders."
He managed to make it back to the bed with even steps, swallowing a groan as he stretched out again, his boots undoubtedly sullying the linens. It was a luxury to have a true bed and not a hammock, to have soft sheets. He should enjoy his rest, since it didn't come often, yet he found himself thinking too much of his prisoner.
"Now eat, and if you say you're not hungry, I'll shove that food down your gullet myself."
After a minute of silence, Plum said, "You should eat too, or at least drink." He scratched at his face. There was little more than peach fuzz there, but he clearly wasn't used to it. Hawk had a jug of water by the bed, and he sipped from a cup.
"There. See how amenable I can be?"
It was Plum's turn to snort, and Hawk had to stop himself from smiling. Why on earth was he smiling at Walter fucking Bainbridge's son? The blood loss must have been severe indeed. He stretched back on his bed. "How old were you when you first killed a man?" Hawk blinked at the unexpected question. Plum poked at his food and added, "I'm just wondering who was the first."
"John."
The answer came unbidden. Hawk hadn't fired the cannon true, but he could still feel the grip of John's hands as they shoved him to safety. Could still taste the spray of John's blood. Shaking his head to banish the past, he said,
15.
"Oh. Was it awful?" He simply answered,
"Yes,"
before he could craft a more appropriate response. As a pirate captain, he should have laughed cruelly and proclaimed that he loved every moment of bloodshed. Truthfully, he'd done what he must over the years, but he never enjoyed it. Constantly striving and hunting, his power over the men tenuous, watching over his shoulder with one hand on his cutlass. Any control over the sea merely an illusion as well. Oh, for a life where he could just be. But enough of this. If they were to be trapped in the cabin together for the time being, he had to forestall any more damn questions. Imperiously he ordered,
"Read me something. Shakespeare."
There was only silence from the corner, and when Hawk looked over, Plum sat frozen, a piece of dried meat between his fingers, his hand halfway to his mouth.
Read?
Was it Hawk's imagination, or had the colour drained from Plum's face?
"I'm bored. Surely you are too. Here is the solution."
He narrowed his gaze. It would be an agreeable way to pass the day. Yet Bainbridge was acting as if he'd been ordered to walk the plank. Plum seemed to recover himself and shook his head.
"I'm afraid I can't. I wasn't able to bring my spectacles when you kidnapped me."
He shoved the meat in his mouth and chewed.
"There's a magnifying glass in the top drawer of the desk."
His throat worked as he swallowed.
"Oh, I'm not sure it will really work the same."
Annoyance flared.
"Try it."
Face pinched, Plum made his way to the desk, bare feet hesitant. He opened the drawer, then closed it.
"I don't see it."
"Look. Otter. If I have to get out of bed and it's in there, I will not be pleased."
Sighing, Plum opened the drawer and promptly removed the glass. Why the devil was he so opposed to the idea? The longer he dragged his feet going to the bookshelves, The more Hawk's bafflement gave way to irritation. He declared,
"I want the Tempest."
Tilting his head to read the spines, Plum ran his fingers over them, the glass hanging unused in his right hand. Seconds ticked by, and he still hadn't picked out the book. Was he being obstinate for the sake of it? For fuck's sake, now that Hawk had decided he wanted to relax, his prisoner was apparently determined to be difficult.
The blue one at the end.
Plum took the book back to his corner. Very, very slowly. Hawk inhaled deeply, fists clenching. Clearly he'd been too lax. Or seeing him brought low by the injury had put ideas into Bainbridge's head as to just who the fuck was in charge here. Plum was his prisoner and needed to be reminded of it. Hawk commanded,
"Start reading, now!"
Feet tucked under him. Plum opened the book, the old leather creaking. He held the glass but didn't use it.
I believe we begin on a ship at sea, do we not?
Then Hawk sneered.
You are lettered, aren't you?
He'd worked damn hard to learn to read and speak more or less like a gentleman, a struggle Walter Bainbridge's son could never understand. Hawk had wanted to pass the time pleasantly for both of them, and this bizarre rebellion was his thanks. Plum's cheeks went even redder, and something flared in his eyes. Embarrassment, fear. Shame. He gripped the book so tightly his fingers were white. Hawk realized there was a tiny divot in his chin that was only visible from certain angles. Not quite a cleft. As Plum's jaw clenched, Hawk watched him, baffled, the rush of anger and frustration giving way to utter confusion. Did Bainbridge raise a son so lazy that he hadn't learned to read? No. Impossible. The sheer misery etched on Plum's face tugged at Hawk. And for a moment of madness, he wished he could ease the mysterious pain. He crushed the impulse, his voice hard as stone.
"Are you stupid?"
Instead of indignant denial, Bainbridge slammed the book shut and shouted, "Yes!" Hawk blinked. He could only ask, "What?" Plum clutched the book to his chest, eyes on the floor. "I'm a dullard. I can't read."
"Ridiculous." Hawk laughed humorlessly. "What game do you think you're playing?"
He tried to imagine what Plum would gain from his ruse and came up empty.
"Do you think I'm stupid? Your station, the way you speak, of course you can read."
Face scarlet, Plum's chest rose and fell. "I'm telling you I can't. I'm stupid." Fury swept Hawk to his feet, despite the howl of protest from his wound.
"And I call you a liar. It's a peculiar lie, I'll grant you that. A simpleton wouldn't know the words you do. Wouldn't be able to use them properly as you do. You've shown intelligence, now quickly you learn to bend the line intending to my leg. Why do you insist on this fiction?"
Plum slumped against the wall, and when he spoke his voice was hoarse. "I barely read half as well as most children. A quarter. It's the truth. Susanna has read to me since I was small. Read for me, covering up my insufficiency. Tutor after tutor failed to educate me. Then Mr. Chisholm came and..." Looking down, he swallowed hard. Yes, there was definitely something there. A vulnerability regarding the tutor. Hawk filed away the information, ignoring a spark of something that could not be jealousy, before prompting,
"And what?"
"He was able to teach me more than anyone else had. But there was nothing to be done for the fact that I'm simply lacking. I don't have the capacity to read and learn the way other men do, the way ladies do. My sisters are far my intellectual superiors, but they had to marry and have children. Susanna would have excelled at Cambridge or Oxford. Alas."
Still gripping the book, he cleared his throat. "Mr. Chisholm tried everything to teach me, but it was hopeless. He made sure to drill me in vocabulary, made sure no one in society would ever know from a drawing-room conversation. It was all he could do.
Hawk stood there in the face of Plum's defeat and found he hated it. He'd worked for days to cow him. But now Hawk was decidedly, most inconveniently, unsettled.
How can this be when your mind is not diminished?
Plum laughed, a harsh bite of sound. I wish I knew. Here, I'll demonstrate. Opening the book again, he struggled through the first part of the scene, his voice lacking any inflection, mixing up small words and stumbling over others, with names especially garbled. He didn't pause in the proper places, all the words streaming together in a slurry as if they held no meaning, as though he was reading a foreign language. Hawk held up a hand.
Enough.
He sat back heavily on the side of the bed, his stitches straining, fire in his thigh. He ignored it.
I believe you.
Thank you, Plum muttered, head down, still holding the book to his chest like a shield.
What does your father make of it?
He had a feeling he knew the answer. Not that he should care.
It's merely curiosity.
Plum raised his head, expression grim. As much as my father wanted me when I was an idea, the reality has been a marked disappointment. Susanna and my tutor did their best to shield me, but of course my father found out the truth. He was furious. He shuddered. He insisted I wasn't applying myself. After a few moments, Hawk pressed, tension stringing tighter through him.
What did he do?
Plum stared at his feet. When I was 10, he rapped my knuckles with a ruler until I was able to read a verse from the Bible without stumbling, until I could say every word properly. After an hour of failure, he'd broken my hand. It swelled up terribly. Susanna and Jane were horrified. I think he was too, because he left me alone after that. He accepted I was a useless dunce. The truth is, he probably won't pay a penny to get me back. As soon as the words escaped, he jolted, eyes wide. For a moment, Hawk couldn't quite catch a breath.
Bainbridge would pay. He must.
Before Hawk could respond, Plum added, I didn't mean... No, you see, of course he'll pay the ransom. Everyone will know about it, and he'd never be able to abide seeming weak.
Acid roiled Hawk's stomach. If Bainbridge didn't pay and the men were denied their prize, it would be a bloody mess.
And he always speaks highly of me outside the family, boasting of my fictitious accomplishments. He won't let me be killed by pirates. He does value me in his own way.
He'd better.
Hawk's fervour for the ransom remained strong, while the urge to strangle Walter Bainbridge with his bare hands had intensified intolerably. It was nonsense to be affronted, for Plum's sake, that Walter should treat him so poorly because of his difficulties reading. After how determined he'd been to father a son, Walter still wasn't satisfied, even though Plum was smart and capable and...
Enough!
Hawk quelled the absurd urge to offer some reassurance. The boy was his prisoner. He was satisfactory, nothing more, and nothing mattered but getting the money. Exacting revenge. Hawk remained confident that Walter Bainbridge's pride would rule the day.
He will raise the ransom or face far too much ridicule and scrutiny from his peers in the new world.
Plum nodded eagerly. Yes, he hates to be seen as lesser in any way. Even if I have to work myself to the bone to repay him, he'll find a way to raise the money. Susanna and her husband will see to it. Susie loves me truly, and is impossible to resist when she sets her mind to something. She has always had a way with our father.
Hawk grumbled. Your father had better pay.
They sat in awkward silence as he cursed himself for engaging with his captive in the first place. Then he said,
I suppose I'll just have to read myself to pass the time.
Holding out his hand, Hawk waited for the book. Plum passed it over, then retreated to his corner. Hawk stretched back on the bed gingerly, his wound aching. He opened the book, its pages slightly yellowed and delicate, the binding beginning to come loose. Plum sat with his legs pulled in, his forehead resting on his knees.
on a ship at sea. A tempestuous noise of thunder and lightning heard.
Plum raised his head, and Hawk noticed his eyes weren't really brown, but the colour of warm honey.